Okay, welcome everyone. This is our lecture number 10, and there will be two more actually. There will be two more next week on Tuesday and Wednesday. So we shall be able to complete the entire program as planned originally, which is better. Today I will review with you discounting and also perhaps talk about obligations, there is bonds, sorry. But since we have more time than expected, I may postpone bonds for next time. Because I really want you to understand where discounting comes from. It's very simple, but it requires some understanding of randomness. First of all, let me proceed to the roll call. Alexandre Bégon, Charlotte Beneteau, Mathilde Bousquet, Fanny Charvon, Jean-Charles Delin, Guillaume Ducléroir, Clara Dufaux, Valentin Durand, Nicolas Fouret, Marie Fusée, Pierre Gambeau, Baptiste Gandry, Chloé Garlaski, Lisiane Gaume, Margot Gazur, Joël Griffot, Julie Hasbrook, Charlotte Lécuyer, Mathieu Lyotard, Marie-Julie Lorenzo, Julien Maurès, Romain Moïse, Damien Monel, Léa Murie, the one that just left, yeah, it's okay. Gladys Nignon, Marion Ollier, Mathilde Paulet, Louis Perazzi, Olivier Poudevigne, Léa Rigoli, Arnaud Rode, Pauline Rodier, Morgane Roland, Adam Roussy, Nicolas Ruth, Léa Soro, Anaïs Vif, and Laurence Villiers. Very good. So I will review once again with you this lesson 6 and 7, trying to make them as easy as possible. Well, I will assume that you have already studied them, but I'll try to show you why we use probability in order to discount. You all have learned that when we want to study an investment, we discount future years. We discount future years to come to a value today of the future cash flows. I really want you to understand well where it comes from. It's not cookbook recipes. It's not black magic. It's very simple. And we shall start once again with a casino with two rooms. In room number one we have a game, and in room number two we have another game. The game here is we pay €2, we throw a die, we receive the number on top in euros. Clear? A die is something that goes from 1 to 6, and the game, it's a game where we always win, by the way, but I mean on average. But that's not the point. The point is that it's a game like that. And here, in room number two, we have a game, which is this. We pay €3. We throw a die. And we receive the number. On top, in euros. Not much different, is it? Just a little bit different. The two games consist in throwing a die, and you get the result on top, but in euros. But in room number one, you pay 2 euros to play that game, and in room number two, you pay 3 euros to play that game. Sounds silly, right? Well, it's not that silly because that's the way people make money in the stock market. But that's a long story. So first of all, let's concentrate on, say, room number two. Study room number two. Let's simulate playing the game. So, Léa Murie, that's the one. Gladys, you throw the die once, you throw the die, and you get a result. What result do you get? The outcome of the die, we shall call it X in general, but you throw it once. Say that again. What? 6. All right. 6. So gain. Net gain. Net gain. Gladys is how much? What? You have difficulties with numbers this morning. You've paid 3 to play. And you received 6. What's your net gain? Gladys. You played in order to play the game, you paid 3 euros. You played the game, you got 6. What's your net gain? No. Do you follow? Vous avez joué au jeu suivant. Vous avez payé 3 euros pour jouer un jeu. Le jeu a consisté à jeter votre dé. Vous avez jeté le dé, vous êtes tombé sur 6. On vous a payé 6. Quel est votre gain net? Comment? 3. Let's do that again now. But not with Nino again. With Gladys. Marion. X2. 4. All right. Net gain? 1. X3. Mathilde Paulet. Where is Mathilde? You throw the die once. You don't get 8. 5. Net gain. Oh. 2. Vous savez, le plus grand mathématicien français qui s'appelle Alexandre Grothendieck, il n'était pas très fort avec les nombres. C'est le plus grand mathématicien français. Il est vieux maintenant, très vieux. Et un jour, comme ça, on lui disait, mais on va prendre un nombre premier. Il n'aimait pas les nombres premiers. C'est pourtant très intéressant. Le nombre premier, il dit comme ça, bon, ok, vous voulez un nombre premier, alors on va prendre 57. Alors toute la salle éclate de rire, parce que 57, c'est pas un nombre premier. Et depuis lors, ça fait 40 ans qu'il y a tous les nombres premiers, plus le nombre premier de Grothendieck, c'est 57. Et il y a aussi le résultat du dé spécial de Nignon, qui est 8. Donc, vous faites partie du club de Alexandre Grothendieck, et vous-même, Gladys. Bon, Louis Perrazzi. You throw your die once. What? 3. Net gain? What? Well, 0. It's called 0. Olivier Poutzing. What? 1. Net gain? -2, etc. Let's do that 10,000 times. And let's see, Léa, she's not here, right? Arnaud Rode, what? I would like you to throw the die once. 5. Net gain? No. 2. All right. Okay, so I hope it's clear to everyone. That's more or less what's going on in the stock market. You buy a stock today, you wait 1 year, and your stock has a price in 1 year. And you have a net gain that is positive or negative, right? The very important point is, well, but before I go to the very important point, let's, first of all, what is the expected value of X? The expected value of X, Pauline Rodier and Morgan Roland, you come to the board. And you compute the expected value of X you're two together? Okay. So you apply the general formula, expected value of a random variable is the sum of all the possible values multiplied by their probabilities. You remember? Okay, well, you do that for this random variable X. What are the AIs here? What are the possible value here of throwing a die? Don't listen to Gladys. Yeah, the possible values are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6, right? The probabilities are always 1, 6, so compute the expected value of, you can, if you throw a die, what's the expected value? Put an equal sign, please. Equal. 1 multiplied by 1 6 plus 2 multiplied by 1 6. Plus 3 multiplied by 1 6, etc. Okay. And here you have a computer, a calculator. What's the result? What? 3.5. Yeah, the result is 3.5. Correct. Okay, thanks. Thank you, ladies. Now, it's one of the very important points of this course. These two random variables, the one generated here, X, and the one generated there, why? They are the same. You agree with me? Who will prefer to play in room 2, and who will prefer to play in room 1? First of all, who prefers room 2? Who prefers to play in room 1? Very good. Excellent. Excellent. We have two random variables that behave the same. They are not the same. They are independent, by the way. But they have exactly the same behavior. From a financial point of view, they are equivalent. They are equivalent. And since they are equivalent, you should pay. They should have the same price today, if you prefer. If they didn't have the same price today, that would be something fishy, as we say, in the kingdom of Denmark. But there would be a possibility of arbitrage. If some people were willing to to play that game, you could actually organize for them this game where you have them pay three, and you with their three you pay two, you keep one, etc., and you make them pay. At any rate, if you have two things which are equivalent with different prices, you can do arbitrage. And since arbitrage doesn't last very long, necessarily, if indeed there is this game here, nobody will play that game, and therefore that game will eventually, if it's another casino in the same city, they will have to go down to €2 in order to attract clients. Clear? Well, that is really the origin of what eventually will become discounting. In these two rooms with equivalent games, that is equivalent to equivalent securities, lies the reason for discounting. Just so that in all my explanations so far, I used to call what I knew S, and what I didn't know Y. If you don't mind, so this is called T, and this is Y, and so I'm gonna change a bit. We have E of Y equals 3.5. I'm not changing anything, it's just in my explanations in the past, the security we knew was S, and the security that we didn't know was Y. And suppose now here we pay something and we don't know what. All right? Buying a ticket to a room is like buying a security in the financial market. Buying a ticket to play the games is exactly like buying a security in the financial market, except that game and financial market, here the experiment is throw the die. Here the experiment is wait 1 year. X here is the outcome of the die. Here X is the value in 1 year of one security. Here, the set of possible values are 1, 2, 3, up to 6. Here, the set of possible values are all possible prices, etc. But to some extent, the stock market is indeed like a casino. It's not entirely like a casino. But as far as the probability behavior is concerned, the stock market is like a casino. You invest today some of your money buying financial securities, what we call financial products, and you wait 1 year and you see how much money you earned. In that sense, it is indeed like a casino. Casinos have a bad image because it's futile, it's just throwing money out of the window, it's relying on randomness to make money, etc. Casinos have bad names, whereas the stock market has a good name, because the stock market is where firms find financing. And you may remember this famous saying of Edith Cresson many years ago when she was prime minister. She said, "La bourse, on n'en a rien à tirer." Well, she meant la bourse viewed as a casino. But she was wrong in the sense that la bourse, the stock market, is the marketplace where firms find their financing. And firms do need financing. And as soon as the financing is too big for a few investors, their owners, their shareholders, the firms need to go to the stock market to find money. And in that sense, la bourse, on n'en a pas rien à cirer. On en a à cirer, tout à fait. But at any rate, to understand the mechanism of the stock market, basic probability like that is helpful. And indeed, here, you understand very well that the two rooms should have the same price. If the two rooms do not have the same price for that ticket, something is fishy. Well, the same is true in the stock market. We can say that S and T have the same risk behavior. They have the same risk behavior. Therefore, they must have the same profitability. They must have the same profitability. That is, we must have E of X minus P of S divided by P of S must be equal to E of Y minus P of T divided by P of T. If we didn't have that, once again, we would have two rooms with different prices, and that should not be possible. And as I said, this can be rewritten. First of all, this part here is called R of S. So we have E of Y minus P of T divided by P of T equal R of S. It must be true, otherwise something is fishy. Therefore, E of Y minus P of T equal R of S times P of T. Or if you prefer putting everything, we have P of T multiplied by 1 plus R of S equal E of Y. Therefore, we have P of T equal E of Y divided by 1 plus R of S. And in the case E of Y And since here E of Y is very simple, first of all, R of S is equal to 3.5 minus 2 divided by 2. You agree with me? That is 0.75. So we must have P of T equal 3.5 divided by 1.75, and that is once again equal to 2. In other words, the two games must have the same price ticket. And mind you, this is as what I call the fundamental equation of finance. It is a very simple equation that comes from the fact that you cannot have two games which are equivalent from a probability point of view with different prices. Yes?
On the real market, are there two different shares?
Yes, there are plenty. There are plenty of shares with the same risk pattern or risk behavior. Yes, there are plenty, and they must have the same profitability. Yes, indeed. Let me write this down. This simple reasoning applies to stocks in the stock market. Two stocks with the same risk behavior must have the same profitability. Two stocks with the same risk behavior must have the same profitability. I need to introduce two precisions. One of them is very simple and the other one is more complicated in order to explain that. So before I develop this fact and then illustrate this fact, and I will be talking about something that is beyond this course called the betas. It's not very complicated, but it would take us a little farther away than this course. I need to introduce two ideas. The first one is this. Here, the two games are really exactly the same. Are exactly the same in the sense that it's throw one die, receive the number on top, etc. So the two securities, not only do they have the same risk behavior, but they really have the same absolute risk behavior. But now let's look at another. Instead of T in room 2, let's look at room 3. Room 3 now. The game, oh, rats. We pay, well, a price we don't know. It's going to be, I'm going to call that a security U. We shall pay a price P U. We throw one die, and we receive, careful, we receive the number, twice the number on top. I claim S and U have the same, or X and Z have the same risk behavior. The fact that we have multiplied the payoff by 2 doesn't change anything. It doesn't change anything. It's very important. That's the easy remark. The other remark is a bit harder, and I will make it in a few minutes. But the fact that they don't have to be somehow identical to have the same risk pattern. They can be identical up to a rescaling factor, because U here is just twice this game. So what will be the price of U? It will be twice the price of playing in room 1. It's as simple as that. And in fact, we can check it, by the way. Of course, applying this formula looks silly in such simple situations. And yet, just about everything relating to the stock market is encompassed in there. And also, all the discountings of physical investments and financial investments, bonds, perpetuities, everything is in there. All right? So let's check the price of U. Price of U. Well, the price of U is equal. First of all, we observe that E of Z divided by sigma of Z happens to be equal to E of X divided by sigma of X. Because having multiplied the previous random variable by 2, we'll multiply by 2 the top and multiply by 2 the bottom. Therefore, the random variable Z, which is the payoff in 1 year of this security, has the same behavior as that one. Therefore, P of U is equal to E of Z divided by 1 plus R of S. Well, what is the expected value of the payoff here? Anyone has a guess? Morgan, you came to the board already, right? Adam Roussy, where is Adam Roussy? He's not here? So Nicolas Ruth and Léa Soro, you come to the board. And you compute E of Z. You compute that. Well, you use the general formula. What are the 6 possible values of Z? Can it be 1, Z? In room 3, what is the game? You throw a die once and you get twice the payoff. Well, the first possible value is 2, multiplied by the first probability, very good, plus second possible value, what? 4. Okay, plus next possible value, no. You have a tough time with numbers, ladies and gentlemen. La prochaine fois, j'arriverai avec des bûchettes. Vous verrez, c'est épatant. Ceci étant dit, on ne fait pas assez de bûchettes à l'école. Je suis sérieux d'ailleurs. Et de billes. Un nombre premier, c'est un nombre de billes qu'on ne peut pas ranger en rectangle. All right, and what is the result? You have a little calculator over there, if you like.
Tout à l'heure, c'était 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Maintenant, c'est 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12. Pas trop difficile de figurer quelle va être la moyenne. On a tout multiplié par 2, les enfants. Et c'est le double. Et voilà. Alors, le double de 3,5, vous voulez mon ordinateur? Je me moque de vous, mais vous êtes pas assez rapide avec les nombres. L'argent, ça se compte avec des nombres. Merci. That's 7. And you could compute that the standard deviation happens to be twice that of x, if you prefer. So in other words, therefore p of u, well, that's equal to 7, p of u equal to 7 divided by 1 plus 0.75. And how much is that? What? 4, absolutely. 7 divided by 1.75. 4. And that should come as no surprise to anyone. So, in room 3, if you pay more than 4, you will never go there. And if you pay less than 4, everybody will flock into room 3 and not go to room 1. Is that clear to everyone? Well, so that is the fact that, you remember, in the stock market, we don't really care about the actual price of a security. We care about its profitability. And for example, we don't care if stocks are split. Once in a while, stocks that behave very well, they are split into two stocks. Remember? Microsoft has gone through about 10 splits since the beginning of Microsoft in 1986. The split is just for the numbers to look small. But if you split a stock into two stocks, you don't change anything to the profitability of the stock. Is that clear? Or if you multiply a stock by two, if in one stock you package it with itself and you sell it as a new stock, you don't change anything in the offer in the stock market. Well, the same is true here. Room number 3, as soon as the price here is, if P of U is equal to 4 euros, is really the same game as room number 1. Clear? Is the same game as room number 1. Except that, well, you had the ticket is twice as much, the payoff is twice as much, the profitability is the same, etc., etc. So, in order to compute, of course, here, once again, it's obvious. Once again, it's obvious here. Now, it's that technically, we can apply this fundamental equation of finance in order to compute the price we should pay in room 3. We should pay the price that makes, since it is essentially the same as room 1, we must pay the price that makes it with the same profitability. Otherwise, there would be an arbitrage possibility. Just for the fun, let's talk about room number 4, which is slightly different. Room 4, let's call it W here, and Z, I'm running out of values, I'm going to call it, little W, why not? I cannot teach more than two random variables at a time, otherwise I'm running out of random variables. No, that's not a good name here, I'm going to call it Q. And here the game, careful, it's a bit different now, the game. Game, we pay, of course, P of W, which we don't know. We throw two dice. We throw two dice. We receive the sum of the numbers in euros. And now, careful, room number 4 is not equivalent to room number 3. Laurence Villiers and Alexandre Bégon, you come to the board. Explain which game do you prefer, room 3 or room 4? Well, first of all, we don't have a price for room 4. Suppose that in room 4 we were to pay also 4 euros. In room 4. Suppose to start with that in room 4 we pay 4 euros. Okay? Which game do you prefer? What? You have to explain why. What are the risk pattern of U and of W? Well, first of all, you are going to compute E of U, and then you will compute E of W. Then you will compute standard deviation of U, and then standard deviation of W. So you start with a expectation of U, that is called Z here. I give a different name for the security itself and for the random variable. Is that clear to everyone? I distinguish, yes. 3 and 4 are not the same game. In room number 3, who can explain why room 3 and room 4 are not the same game? In one of them, we multiply one die by 2. In the other one, we add 2 dice. You follow? Okay, so what is the expectation of Z? Well, or U, my notations are not very good, I'm sorry. Expectation of Z, first of all. Can you compute Z that's in room 3? What are the possible values of Z? Sigma of AI PI. Very good. All right. So what are the possible values taken by Z? Wait. Je sais. On l'a calculé il y a 5 minutes, même, pour être précis. Mais il y a des gens qui ne suivent pas beaucoup. Donc on reprend. Why do you put 4? No. Bah oui, mais bon, c'est peut-être. Vous êtes à l'ESC Clermont, mon ami. Personne ne vous oblige à venir à l'ESC Clermont, personne. Mais ici, voilà, les gens sont dans une classe, ils écoutent un cours de finance et ils participent. OK, the first possible value is 2. Ensuite, comment? Ah non. Là, on a dans la room number 3, on a un seul dé et on multiplie le résultat par 2. Oui, ça c'est la pièce numéro 3. Elles sont équivalentes à investir dans des sécurités à la bourse, hein, à une petite différence près que j'expliquerai dans quelques minutes. Mais vous mettez une mise, vous lancez l'expérience et vous obtenez une somme à la fin de l'expérience. C'est la bourse. Et c'est de là que vient le discounting. Voilà. Alors, ça fait combien tout ça? Alors, vous avez obtenu. D'accord, allez-y. Vous obtenez 4. C'est parfait. Non, attendez. Non, pas du tout. Ben non, c'est pas 4. Ben, j'en sais rien. Bon, il faut faire le calcul, les enfants. Oui, d'accord, mais ça fait pas 80. Donc il y a une œil. Il y a un cheveu dans la soupe là. Bon, je vais le faire à l'ordinateur. Les valeurs, c'est les A et les probabilités, c'est les P. Donc ici, on a 2, 4, 6, 8, 10 et 12. Vous êtes d'accord avec ça? Les probabilités, c'est chaque fois, c'est 1 divisé par 6. Tac. Je multiplie tout. Ouais, ça doit faire 7. Alors c'est bien. Allez vous asseoir, vous avez mérité de la patrie. Mais il faut vous concentrer plus, les enfants. Sinon, ça sert à rien. J'ai l'impression de parler dans le vide. Ok, we had just done that before, and of course, here we shall get the same, but it's a bit more complicated because the probabilities here for W. For W, now, what? W, what are the AIs and what are the PIs? What are the possible values of W here? We throw two dice. Yeah, now it's 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. 10, 11, and 12. Is that correct? So what is the probability of getting 2? Un sur quoi? Non. Non. Ouais. Ici, quelle est la façon, la possibilité d'obtenir 3? Quoi? Ah, il y a plusieurs dés. C'est 2 sur 36. Il y a deux façons de faire, hein. Ensuite, la possibilité d'obtenir 4. Il y a 1 et 3, 2 et 2, et 3 et 1, et puis c'est tout.
Ensuite, bon, ça va faire 4. Hein. Et ensuite, il doit y avoir 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. 6 sur 36. 1 jusqu'à 6, la somme de 1 jusqu'à 6, ça fait 6 fois 7, 42, divisé par 2, ça fait 21. 21, ça... 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Je crois que c'est ça. 5, 4, 3, 2 et 1. Ça fait 21 et 6, ça fait 5 fois 6, ça fait 15. 21 et 15, ça fait 36. Ça colle. Donc ça, là, ça fait 1. D'accord ? La distribution de 2D, c'est, vous vous rappelez, c'est le chapeau. Hein ? Donc, on va faire la... On va faire ça pour les 2D. Donc, 1, 2... non, j'ai dit, pardon, excusez-moi. 2, 3... Jusqu'à 12. Ça, c'est les A pour 2D, n'est-ce pas? Maintenant, je regarde les P pour 2D. Et j'ai dit que c'était égal à... On va multiplier par 36 pour simplifier la vie. 36 fois P. Donc ici, ça fait 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2 et 1. Ça déconne quelque part. Ah bah oui, non. C'est... Alright. So ici, je vais mettre les P eux-mêmes. Voilà. Et maintenant, je regarde les produits une fois de plus, d'accord? Alors, 2, c'est la première valeur possible de jeter 2D, multiplié par la première probabilité, et puis, je les regarde toutes, et si je les somme égale et voilà, bon, ça c'est normal, d'accord? C'est-à-dire qu'en d'autres termes, bien évidemment, la moyenne de jeter 2 dés, c'est aussi 7. Vous me suivez? Mais là où ça devient intéressant, c'est que ça n'a néanmoins pas les mêmes comportements probables. Il y en a un qui va avoir moins de risques que l'autre. Vous voyez ce que je veux dire? Il y a une des deux pièces qui a moins de risques que l'autre. Quelle est la pièce qui a moins de risques? Non. C'est la pièce numéro 4 qui a moins de risques. Eh ben non, c'est le contraire. C'est à la fois tout simple ce que je vous explique, et effectivement c'est le cœur de la finance élémentaire. C'est la maîtrise du comportement probable des titres financiers. Et il se trouve que quand... La pièce numéro 4, elle présente moins de risques que la pièce numéro 3. D'ailleurs, on va le calculer, si vous voulez. On va le faire à l'ordinateur. Ça se fait à la main, mais ça prendra un moment. Alors, voyons voir. Je vais faire un petit peu de place. Bon, ben ici, je vais commencer par mettre toutes les... Je vais calculer la variance, d'accord? Dans la pièce numéro 3. Vous me suivez? Alors, la variance, je regarde les six écarts par rapport à la moyenne au carré. On est bien d'accord? Donc, je prends le premier écart. Non, ça, c'est pas ça que je veux. Le premier écart, c'est ça moins la moyenne au carré.
Alors, je ne suis pas très habitué avec mon machin Linux, là. Voilà. Et pour aller vite, je vais fixer tout de suite ce bazar. Donc ça, c'est la première déviation par rapport à la moyenne, au carré. Donc ça va bien. Tac, les voici toutes. Je vais multiplier tout ça. Maintenant, je m'intéresse à la moyenne des déviations au carré pour calculer une variance. Vous vous rappelez ? Une variance, c'est la moyenne des déviations au carré. Donc, je regarde la première déviation au carré que je multiplie par la première probabilité. Et puis, je les regarde toutes. Tac. Et maintenant, ma variance, c'est tout simplement égal à la somme de tout ça. Voilà. Donc, la variance, dans le premier cas, c'est ici, c'est la variance. Enfin, c'est le résultat. Hein. Et la déviation standard, ou l'écart type, si vous préférez, c'est tout simplement la racine carrée. Donc, c'est ça à la puissance 1/2. Voilà. Donc, l'écart type dans la pièce numéro 3, c'est 3,42. Et si mes calculs sont corrects, dans la pièce numéro 4, ça va être moins. Ça va être moins. Et, alors, on va le calculer. Alors, j'ai de nouveau besoin de calculer toutes les déviations par rapport à la moyenne au carré. Voilà la première déviation, c'est d'ailleurs pas étonnant, mais on en a quand même plus. Tac, les voici toutes. Je regarde maintenant la moyenne de toutes ces déviations au carré. Ça me donnera la variance. Et maintenant, je m'intéresse à la somme, c'est-à-dire la variance, c'est la somme de tous ces nombres. Et l'écart type, de toute façon, ça y est, c'est clair, hein. C'est la racine carrée de ce bazar. Oh, attendez, il y a une petite erreur quelque part. C'est ça que je veux. Voilà. D'accord ? Donc, on a E de Z égale 7, standard déviation de Z égale 3,42, et on a E de W égale 7, évidemment, et standard déviation de W, enfin W ou Q, c'est plutôt Q que je devrais mettre, excusez-moi, Q, eh bien on vient de le calculer, c'est 2,42. Donc, la deuxième variable aléatoire, elle est plus serrée que la première. Si on regarde sigma divisé par E, pour W, j'ai 2,42 divisé par 7. Ça fait 0,35. Et pour Q, je me suis trompé là. C'est pour Q de 0,35, pardon. Et là, c'est 3,42 divisé par 7. Ça fait 0,49. Voilà. Donc, curieusement, ça fait partie des singularités des probabilités. Ça, c'est des choses que Pascal, encore un type de Clermont-Ferrand, a expliqué au XVIIe siècle. Et c'est lui qui a commencé à expliquer sérieusement les probabilités, Pascal. Parce qu'il y avait des joueurs invétérés qui étaient très bons sur un plan pratique. Ils savaient tout un tas de trucs sur un plan pratique, mais ils ne comprenaient pas pourquoi. Un certain chevalier de Méret, dont vous avez peut-être entendu parler, et il avait consulté Pascal qui a commencé à expliquer tout ça à l'aide en fait de dénombrements intelligents qui l'ont amené d'ailleurs à concevoir un truc très compliqué qui s'appelle le triangle de Pascal. Vous en avez peut-être entendu parler du triangle de Pascal. C'est en gros, c'est les coefficients du binôme A plus B à la puissance N. C'est les coefficients, c'est le triangle de Pascal. Ça joue un rôle à un moment donné, mais pas ici. Et alors, pour moi, c'est très important que vous compreniez pourquoi la pièce numéro 4, c'est pas... Autant la pièce numéro 3, elle est équivalente à la pièce numéro 1. D'accord ? Ou la pièce numéro 2. Elles sont équivalentes. C'est simplement la pièce numéro 1 multipliée par 2. Donc c'est exactement comme si ici vous avez Microsoft aujourd'hui et ici vous avez Microsoft après un split demain. Ça ne change rien pour des investisseurs. Vous me suivez ? Que Microsoft du jour au lendemain dise à tous ses actionnaires « Ok, vous avez tous des actions de Microsoft, on va vous les prendre toutes et on va vous en donner deux fois plus ». Ce seront des nouvelles actions Microsoft après ce que l'on appelle un split. Split, ça veut dire comme un banana split, c'est une coupure en deux. Ça ne change rien pour personne. Le seul changement, c'est que vos actions, elles valent moins cher, mais vous en avez deux fois plus. Ça aide les gens dans le marché à considérer investir dans Microsoft parce que ce n'est pas cher. La seule justification d'un split, c'est que les actions restent pas chères. Et alors à l'inverse, quand, pour des raisons de snobisme ou autre, on ne fait pas de split et que la boîte se porte extrêmement bien, vous avez des actions qui valent extraordinairement cher. La plus connue, c'est celle de Warren Buffett. Sa société, elle s'appelle Berkshire Hathaway. Dans les années 70, l'action valait, je dis ça au pif, 30 ou 40 euros, dollars, et maintenant elle vaut 100 000 dollars. Il n'a jamais fait de split. C'est un peu une coquetterie. Il aurait pu faire des splits, ça ne change rien. Ce que ça change, c'est que maintenant, vous et moi, enfin, certains d'entre vous peut-être, mais moi, je ne peux pas acheter de Warren Buffett. Je peux me mettre à plusieurs avec des copains pour acheter une action Warren Buffett, mais je ne peux pas en acheter une, parce que ça vaut 100 000 dollars. Et puis, les gens qui ont des actions Warren Buffett, ils ne les vendent pas. Peut-être d'une certaine manière, dans la mesure, ça évite, il y a des sortes de conséquences psychologiques. D'une part, les gens sont très heureux d'avoir du Warren Buffett, et deuxièmement, c'est difficile à vendre, un truc qui vaut 100 000 dollars. Mais enfin, bon, c'est tout à fait secondaire. Encore une fois, avant ou après un split, c'est du point de vue d'un investisseur, c'est exactement pareil. Mais là, c'est pas du tout pareil. Pas du tout. Vous me suivez ? C'est pas du tout pareil. Et ce sont deux actions. Acheter du U ou acheter du W, dans les deux cas de figure, vous avez effectivement une expected value de 7. Mais dans le premier cas, vous avez un écart type de 3,42 et ici, vous avez un écart type qui est plus petit, qui est de 2,42. Et c'est une illustration d'une situation plus générale. Supposez que j'avais divisé par deux ensuite le résultat. C'est-à-dire qu'en gros, ici, je regardais l'écart type tout simplement de lancer un seul dé. Bon, c'est un certain écart type. Lancer un seul dé qui est d'ailleurs exactement égal à 1,7. Lancer un dé, ça a une moyenne de 3,5 et ça a un écart type de 1,7. Bon, c'est comme ça. Mais lancer deux dés et diviser par deux, ça a une moyenne de 3,5, mais ça a un écart type qui est moindre, qui est 1,2. Et si maintenant je lance 10 dés, et je divise par 10 le résultat, j'aurai une moyenne de 3,5. Et l'écart type, il sera comment ? Vous lancez 10 dés, vous sommez les résultats, et vous divisez par 10.
eh bien vous avez quelque chose qui est très proche de 3,5. C'est très rare que 10 dés moyennés se baladent beaucoup loin de 3,5. C'est la loi des grands nombres. C'est la loi des grands nombres. Et donc ici, c'est un premier pas vers la loi des grands nombres. Quand vous faites une moyennisation de variables aléatoires identiques, vous changez pas la moyenne, mais vous réduisez la variabilité. Très important. Très important. Quand vous avez une collection de variables aléatoires identiques, indépendantes, vous les additionnez et vous divisez par leur nombre, ça s'appelle une moyennisation, vous ne changez pas la moyenne, mais vous réduisez la variabilité. C'est pas une surprise pour les uns et les autres. Hein? C'est que vous connaissez. C'est la base des sondages, c'est la base de tas de trucs. C'est pour ça que quand on fait des sondages, on ne demande pas à 3 personnes, on demande à 1000 personnes. Parce qu'à partir de 1000, dans une grande population, on commence à avoir des résultats assez proches du résultat théorique. Alors, ça me conduit à l'idée suivante, c'est que j'ai dit que la bourse se comporte plus ou moins... I'm going to switch back to English. The stock market is a bit like the rooms of our casino. Each room is like one security. But in the stock market, securities have a random behavior which is the sum of two parts, unlike here, which is the sum of two parts. I have to continue on the next page. In the stock market, securities have a random behavior. Each security has a random behavior, which is the sum of two parts, two random parts. One part is a randomness linked to the market. Another part is a randomness specific of the security. By taking several securities of the same global risk behavior and averaging, we can get rid of the specific randomness part. In other words, when we talk about securities in the stock market, we shall now only refer to their fundamental randomness. The first part is also called the fundamental randomness, called fundamental randomness. I shall not use that and elaborate much on this idea, but for those of you who go into further finance in your studies, be aware that in the stock market, it's slightly more complicated than in these four rooms, or three or four rooms. We have two types of randomness. One that is related and actually totally determined by the randomness of the market, plus an extra randomness specific of each security, and that extra part can be eliminated out by building portfolios of similar stocks. If you have plenty of stocks which have the same global behavior, or rather the same fundamental randomness, well, I should rather say same fundamental rather than global, the same fundamental risk behavior, you take quite a few of them and you invest your money into each of them. Therefore, you have a portfolio that average several stocks of the same nature. And by averaging, we do something like in room number 4. We narrow the specific part. The only thing that you have to remember is that the stock market is slightly more involved than my rooms here. Slightly more involved. I will not develop these ideas. They would pertain to a further course with you, which we shall not have together. They belong to the theory called the CAPM. Capital Asset Pricing Model, that was developed in the 60s. And that got the Nobel Prize to Sharp and Markowitz, and probably somebody else, I forget. It was thought in the 60s that this modeling would finally explain perfectly the stock market. It turns out that it is not the case. It's a modeling of the stock market that does not work very well. CAPM. The CAPM doesn't work very well. It is a large development of these ideas. Some of the ideas in the CAPM, like this one, are nice. And the link between a security and the stock market is called its beta. It's beta, and this is called the extra random component, which can be averaged out. And then it was thought, once again, that we could rationalize perfectly investment into all sorts of portfolios in the stock market, and that has been driving the investment strategy of all sorts of funds, financial funds. But it has been shown that a monkey investing randomly was doing as well as most of the funds. That is, it has been tried, all these things, it's funny. So it doesn't work very well. But at any rate, be aware of the fact that we have looked at the very beginning of the ideas of the CAPM and the so-called betas. The betas measure the sensitivity of a stock with respect to the market. But we shall not go into that. My purpose is to rationalize discounting. We shall not dig into the CAPM, advanced theory, and doesn't work very well.
although much hopes in the 60s. Much hopes in the CAPM in the 60s and 70s. We just explained the origin of the equation price of t equal e of y divided by 1 plus r of s, which in turn is the cornerstone of discounting calculation. That's the objective today. It's a review, since we have already covered that a few weeks ago together. But hopefully now, with this first review, for some of you, it will be clearer. I will ask you at the final exam, what is the fundamental equation of finance? The fundamental equation of finance is this: P of t equal E of y divided by 1 plus R of s. So please note that, yes. We shall not dig into the CAPM. It's an advanced theory, doesn't work very well, although much hopes were put into the CAPM in the 60s and 70s. Okay? We just explained the origin of the equation, that, which in turn is the cornerstone of discounting calculations. In order to understand discounting, you have to go back to thinking about our two rooms in the casino. Room 1 and room 2, same game, it must have the same price. Same game must have the same price. Otherwise, nobody will go to the game that is too expensive. And so, if the two games have the same price, the second game, you can always compute its price with this formula. I extended it a little bit. The concept of same games, I said that in room number three was just the game of room number two multiplied by two. And I said, essentially, it is still the same game. Still the same game. You can still apply this equation, and therefore, you get twice the price. And then I introduced the idea of a game that was different. That was room number four. Perhaps I will make a list of all these. Room number one was a game with a price and profitability. Room number two, it was an identical game. I said, must have the same price. Room number three, I created a game that was essentially the same. Essentially the same. Essentially the same as room 1, just multiplied by 2. I said it's the same game again, because between room 3 and room 1 is just a stock split. A stock split has no impact on the strategy of an investor. And then, for the fun, I introduced room number 4. It was 2 dice, and that is quite different from room 3. I showed that room 4 has the same expected value, but less variability. It is closer, if you like, to a bond with a sure payment. Less variability. Room 4 has less
variability. Because when you add up two dice, you have less variability than when you multiply one die by two. And think of dividing by two, if you like. If you average two dice, you have less variability than with one die. So then I introduce the sophisticated idea in CAPM that can be proved in mathematics, that in a well-behaved market, all stocks have two parts in their randomness, one linked to the market and the other one that is an extra random part, and that investors don't care about the extra part because they average that in two portfolios. But that is a first idea in the CAPM, which we shall not develop for two reasons. It's an advanced theory and it doesn't work very well. But I would like you to have heard of it. Do you need a... Here? Two dice is different from room number three. Room four has less variability. We computed that. Variability of room number three, variability of room number four. Okay, this is a good point to take a break.